south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. Sometimes I get emails from the over 50 crowd who were down in Latin America a long, long time ago with the Peace Corps or some do-gooder group anyway. They tell me they do remember how it used to be down here in Latin America when the government owned everything. Everything was a monopoly. The utilities, the phone companies, the water companies. However, these days, pretty much all that's left of those monopolies are the water companies. And of course, like I mentioned many times before, you don't want to have municipal water. In short, because it's polluted, in fact, it's ugly coming out of the tap, there's no pressure and so unreliable that in most instances, it's rarely on the whole day. Normally, well, normal for down here, anyway, that means 6, 8, 10, 12 hours a day, meaning you have to have a cistern. That's a big-ass water storage tank, by the way, that automatically gets topped off when the city water is flowing. So when you hear the word cistern, it's not just a tank. It's the tubes and check valves and sensors and a pump, too. The cheaper systems like that, which can hold about maybe 100 gallons, can run as little as $150 complete, and maybe $20 or $25 to install. Remember, plumbers don't get brain surgeon wages down here. They get $15 to $30 a day. Don't believe me? Come on down. Get your boots on the ground. Come and see for yourself. However, I advise you not to get a cheap 100-gallon unit. Get something that's 5 or even 10 times as big. Hey, now there's a t-shirt. You can never be too rich, too skinny, or have too large a cistern. That you have on the front of the t-shirt, and on the back, a photo of Kim Kardashian's cistern. But I digress as usual. Anyway, when you have a cistern, it automatically kicks in when the city water shuts down, so you'll never know when that happens, and you won't have to worry if you have a big enough cistern. So bottom line, don't let any do-gooder know-it-all up in the States say it's a shame that in third world countries, governments are privatizing those formerly public utilities. Sure, you'll hear the odd case of poor people picketing government buildings when they privatize water, for example. Because, you see, when that happens, the price automatically doubles, triples, sometimes quadruples. And at first thought, you might think, those poor people and those terrible capitalists ripping them off like that. But let me tell you a little story. My maintenance guy and cleaning lady, both indigenous people, they live in the same little tin shack and cement community about a mile from my place out in the coffee fields. And my maintenance guy tells me he gets water about 8 hours a day. However, he only pays $1.50 a month for the privilege. Of course, it's dirty, polluted, over-chlorinated municipal water that dribbles out of the tap with a stream as thick as a pencil and noticeably cloudy. And you know, just the other day I said to him, would you be willing to pay $3 or even $6 a month to get clean, high-pressure water 24/7? He said, why, sure. Now remember, here's a guy that makes around $300 a month, and he'd still pay 3, even 4 times as much if the water came 24/7 and with good pressure. Oh, and by the way, in gated, guarded communities that have their own well, there's always a full-time plumber slash maintenance guy on the premises that keeps the system working. He's called a fontanero. That's fontanero. Now, if you write that out in letters, you'll see it's got the word fountain in it. So there's another one of those many Spanish-English memory aids. Fontanero? Fountain. Anyway, like I said, I get emails occasionally from the former Peace Corps do-gooder crowd who did come down 20, 30, even 40 years ago. Most of them tell me they remember just how primitive and rustic it was when they were down helping poor, short, dark people by building solar outhouses for Jesus. Wait a minute. I could be wrong about that. Scratch the solar panel part. That came later. Anyway, these guys and gals remember in great detail how the water, the electricity, and the phone service went out at least a couple of times a week, sometimes for hours and hours, even days. But I'm here to tell you, even off the Gringo Tourist Trail, way out in the boonies, that kind of stuff rarely happens anymore, unless it's a big storm with a lot of lightning strikes, or a natural catastrophe, an earthquake, or maybe a tree lopping off a power line. Now, in the old days, something like that might take days and days to fix. Let's talk about electric power. Everybody needs that 24/7, right? Well, if your electric goes out, you take a copy of your electric bill and you dial up the emergency number that's on it. And way back when these were government monopolies, almost always, it would take you 2 or 3 tries to even get through. And when you did, there was more than a 50% chance the line was busy. And if by chance it wasn't, you'd be put on hold so long you'd eventually give up. Now, a little over 20 years ago, I lived in a luxury condo in Costa Rica, and the power would go out 3, 4, 5 times a week for an hour or 2 or 3 at a time. Back then, my Spanish really sucked, so almost all my friends were gringos or upscale Latins who spoke English. Now, when I did complain about it, and gringos whine and complain about such things, I'd say, "This is nuts. How can you plan anything? How can you get things done?" Well, you know, some of those gringos would laugh when I said things like that. They'd say, "Is that right? You say when your power goes off, it stays off for a couple hours at a time. Why, Johnny, that's because you live in that high-rise tower where the Swiss ambassador lives. You have diplomats in your building, so you only have tiny power outages. Now, when our power goes out, we just crack out the beer, the wine, the candles, the Coleman lantern, the sterno, the shortwave radio, and settle in." So then why am I bringing this up? Because so many people who were down many years ago still think public services are, well, crappy. That said, how about some real present-day, off-the-gringo tourist trail examples? Electric power, for instance. Well, a couple of days ago, a huge storm rolled through. This is the rainy season, you know. Lightning and thunder everywhere. You haven't experienced a lightning storm till you've been in the thick of one down here in Latin America. Anyway, I was out in my place in the coffee fields, and I saw lightning hit a power pole about 2 blocks away and completely fry the big transformer that was on top of it. And I mean, it was like an electrical explosion you see in the Hollywood movies. Almost looked like someone planted a bomb. Sparks everywhere, then boom, lights out. So then an hour later, when the storm passed, I grabbed an old electric bill and phoned up the emergency number. And a lady's voice, a recording, came on the phone in Spanish. And by the way, there is no press 1 for English down here. She said, "Press 1 if you have billing questions. Press 2 for emergencies." So I pressed 2. And then the recording said, "Please punch in the number of your contadora." That's your electric meter. Contadora. Now, if you notice, the word contadora has the English word count in it. So there's another Spanish-English memory aid. Your meter, whether it's a water, gas, or electric meter, is called a contadora. In other words, it's counting units of water, electricity, or gas. By the way, smart meters have not invaded Latin America yet. Oh yes, I've seen one or two, but only in brand new subdivisions. In fact, one expat gringo friend of mine who built a new house had his smart meter removed by an electrician who just replaced it with one of the old meters. Easy as that. He just told the electric company it was causing television and computer interference, and they said, "Okay, pull it." So anyway, I'm on the phone to the electric company. And by the way, a company of any kind down here is called an empresa. Empresa. So the electric company would be the Empresa Electrica. Anyway, I was talking to a real live lady on the phone. How about that? And she said, "Would you please go over to your fuse box?" By the way, fuses are called fusables. How about that one? Anyway, she said, in Spanish, of course, "Go to the fuse box and switch the breakers a few times." I guess they have to tell that to every idiot who calls up and says they've got a problem. They're not going to send a truck out if an easy fix is just to flip the breakers. That sometimes does it when it's simply a power surge that came down the line and kicked out the main breaker. However, with my particular problem, that wasn't the case. Now, I've been down here long enough that I can tell she was happy to be speaking to a gringo. Doesn't matter if I was a male or female, I was probably the only gringo she'd ever really spoken to in her life. So she actually tried to keep me on the phone. By the way, here's something really crazy. It's got to make you smile. What do you do when you blow a circuit breaker? Well, you flip them back on, right? With a click. You flip them back on. Well, do you know what they call circuit breakers here? I mean, come on, nobody really uses fuses anymore. They use circuit breakers, right? Well, like I said, you flip them on when they blow. Well, the Spanish word for circuit breaker is flip on. I'm not kidding you. Flip on. Now, how do you suppose that came about? If you don't believe me, just go into any hardware store and say, "Flip ons, por favor." Now, when you get down here, you'll find it really helps a lot that all the technical things and gadgets and switches and TVs and appliances, etc., Practically everything that makes your life convenient and easy was invented up in the first world. And so, when those items got down here to Latin America, they had to name them in Spanish, but most of the time, thankfully, they did it by bastardizing the English word somehow. So, by sheer luck and to our great advantage, there are hundreds, if not thousands, of Spanish words that carry along with them the English root, providing easy and instant memory aids. And you know, I could probably list a thousand. How about this one? Microonda. That's microwave. How about electric circuit? Circuito eléctrico. How about television? Televisor. Or stereo? Estéreo. Or how about sofa? Get this. Sofa. Lamp? Lámpara. Telephone? Teléfono. Jacket? Chaqueta. Car? Carro. Automobile? Automóvil. Tube as in electrical tube or pipe? Tubo. Guitar? Guitarra. Whiskey? Whiskey. So you see, this kind of thing kind of goes on forever. There's no limit to it, which is a very good thing for clueless gringos who have sort of a mental block when it comes to learning languages. Now, I know a lot of expats who live on the gringo tourist trail, and they've been there for some years now, and they just can't learn their Spanish. How can they when all their neighbors are gringos? However, when you're off the gringo tourist trail or slightly off the tourist trail, there's a difference, you know. You will be forced into learning Spanish, even if you're a language dunce like me. Now, for all you expat gonna-bes and wannabes who don't know a lick of Spanish, I was like that too. When I came down, I knew a tiny bit of French, no Spanish at all. And back then, 26 years ago, there was no internet, no CD Spanish courses, some conversational courses on cassettes, and I had some of those, but they didn't seem to do me any good because once I got down here to Latin America, I found out the kind of Spanish they speak when they teach you up in the States is not the kind of Spanish they speak down here. This is street conversational Spanish, not the proper old world book-taught Spanish that you get in high school and college up in the States. Now, you can't say it's not useful to learn proper old world Spanish. It's good for reading Spanish literature, which, by the way, I can hardly slog through. Man, I've tried, but I just can't get excited about it. You know, Shakespeare was the same way with me, so guess I'm a hopelessly cliched, kind of bourgeois common guy. By the way, speaking of Shakespeare, it's said that he had about a 9,000-word English vocabulary in writing all those plays and sonnets. So why am I bringing this up? Well, fresh green gringos and expat gonna-bes and wannabes are always asking me for little tips and pointers to fast-track the Spanish learning process. And it's true. There are hundreds of books and CDs and online courses to learn Spanish, but like diet books and CDs, most people get off to a good start and then they drop the ball. Now, you might remember that one of my expat insider seminar attendees wrote a very good book called Fast Spanish. It was all about the best ways to learn Spanish in Latin America with boots on the ground. That said, based on my experience learning Spanish, I'm going to give you some tips you probably never heard before. Remember, I came down here with zero Spanish, a self-professed language dunce, and it took me 5 years to communicate decently in Spanish with my cleaning lady. But before I give you those tips, let me lay this on you. It's a perspective you might never have heard before. As it turns out, linguistics experts say that there are just 250 words that constitute the essential core of any language, and without those words, you cannot construct a logical, understandable sentence. So, you know, based on that, you have to be an extreme optimist. Just think about it. If you learn just one new Spanish word a day, in less than a year, you'll have enough words down so you'll be able to function and get around. So then why not learn 2, 3, 4, even 5 words a day? Then within 2 or 3 months, you'll have it down. And get this, linguistics experts say that 750 words constitute all the words that are used every single day by most all people who speak conversationally on the street. Think of it. You really only need to learn about 750 words and you'll pretty much be able to handle anything that comes up in day-to-day conversation. So then, suppose you learn 5 words a day. That's it. Just 5 months, you'll be there. And how about this? Linguistics experts say that 2,500 words should enable you to express everything you could possibly want to say in any informal street conversation. And then experts say 5,000 words constitutes the active vocabulary of a born native speaker with a high school education. 10,000 words constitutes the active vocabulary of a native-born speaker with a college education. And finally, they say, With 20,000 words under your belt, you can read, understand, and actually enjoy a solid work of literature such as a novel. However, if you're well short of that 20,000 words, you can use my excuse. That is that you just don't dig Spanish literature. It's boring, long-winded, and gives you a headache. And you know, I've expressed that opinion a number of times in mixed company, and I still get invited to parties. The gringo advantage rides again. You know, the Spanish language has about half as many words as the English language. Experts say that's why it's so much easier for native English speakers to learn Spanish, and so much more difficult for native Spanish speakers to learn English. By the way, according to the Oxford English Dictionary, the English language has the most words of all languages, coming in at around 2 million words. That said, here's a couple of what I think are very good Spanish language learning tips, personal picks I discovered as I mumbled and fumbled through the Spanish language myself. I know, there's always those quick studies that can pick up a language in a couple of months. Don't you hate those guys? But now I'm talking about the average person and language lunkheads like me. And do note, you can learn all the Spanish vocabulary you want. You could be an expert. You could learn 20, 30, 40,000 Spanish words and know all your tenses inside out. And that's what you might need if your goal is to read Spanish literature and enjoy it. As for me, I'll take my 2,000 hard-earned Spanish vocabulary words, thank you very much. As for the desire to learn more and to reach higher Spanish literary plateaus, well, I'd much rather get a subscription to Netflix. In fact, I think I've only met about 3 or 4 gringo expats in my life who read Spanish literature for pleasure. Now, let me tell you, when you first get down here and your Spanish really sucks, there will be a time when you sit down somewhere. Strangely enough, most likely it'll be in a cheap backpacker hotel. Anyway, I promise you, at one time or another, you'll run into a gringo reading a Spanish literary classic. And hell, as far as you're concerned, it might as well be written in Vulcan. You know, when you're a green expat and you just don't understand shit, there's nothing more intimidating than a guy like that. And the funny thing is, it's almost always scruffy, odoriferous backpackers who are Spanish majors in college. Of course they'll be able to read and digest boring Latin literature. And they'll defend it, even remain aloof, in the face of dilettantes and uncultured slugs like me. Now, I was an engineer in a past life, so I'll defend Faraday and Tesla and Newton, Richard Feynman, Einstein, etc. But I don't get any pleasure out of reading their books. In fact, they're dead boring. But where were we? Oh yeah, my personal tips on learning Spanish. Now remember, 250 words, that's all you really need to get around. But remember, they have to be the right 250 words. And if you're thinking words like vato, ese, cabrón y puta, hey, you'll fit right in Mexico. Now, if you go beyond that and learn, let's say, 1,000 Spanish words. By the way, that's about as many words as a 5-year-old kid knows in his native language. Anyway, just learning the top 1,000 words in Spanish will get you to the point where you can understand roughly 90% of the spoken language on the street. That's more than enough to muddle through practically any conversation. So, even if you miss 10 or 20% of what the other guy's saying, you'll get the gist. By the way, if you want to know those key Spanish words that you really should learn first, there's a nice thorough report called the Spanish Word Frequency Study, and if you send me an email and ask for that, I'll give you the link and you can check it out. In fact, here's some of the statistics from that report. It says, number one, learning the first 1,000 most frequently used words in Spanish will allow you to understand about 76% of all nonfiction writing, about 80% of all fiction writing, and an astounding 89% of all oral speech. Now, if you're really ambitious, it says if you learn the top 2,000 most frequently used words, which is about how many words an 8-year-old kid knows, that'll get you to about 84% for nonfiction reading, 86% of all fiction reading, and about 93% of the spoken Spanish language. Now note, after you've learned around 2,000 of most frequently used words, after that, you don't improve your comprehension much at all. So don't stress, even if you only attain that 8- or 9-year-old level, you'll still understand more than 90% of what people are saying on the street. And they'll understand about 80 or 90% of what you're saying too. That's even if your past and future tenses completely suck. Though you might have to repeat what you're saying a few times for them to get it. Oh, and you'll know when to repeat a phrase all right. You'll see that strained look on their faces. So again, it's important to start out with the right 250 words. And now for the second of my Spanish language tips for dumbasses. get some cheap clone Post-it pads. And each day, stick one on each of 5 items you have in the house. Of course, writing the Spanish word for that item on the Post-it pad. Then, after a few months, your house will be a fire trap, and visitors will think you have gone nuts. But you'll be mastering some of the very common Spanish language vocabulary words, too. But do be smart about it. For example, if you've got a tropical fish tank with 17 fish, you don't want to label each and every one of them. And not just because the Post-its won't stick and the fish won't like it either. You know what I mean. Oh, and by the way, the Post-it note thing extends to your car, your closets, and your workspace, too. Now, this is important. You just can't think the words in your head when you go past the Post-it notes. You have to sound them out. So you'll be talking to yourself a lot. And the neighbors will probably think you're nuts and keep their dogs and kids away from you. But that's all right. It's all part of your plan B, voting with your feet. And let's face it, they just wouldn't understand. Okay, my next tip is very useful, and I wish someone would have told me this a long time ago. Now, you know there's a past tense and a future tense. Past perfect, future perfect. Well, just a lot of screwy tenses to keep track of. And right off the bat, when we start learning, we get frustrated and uptight about all those tenses, not to mention irregular verbs, too. Okay, so here's a great tip for conversational street Spanish. Forget about all those screwy past and future tenses. Just learn everything in the present tense and you'll be fine. Why? You'll find out in a hurry once you get down here that Latins will understand the point you're trying to get across, even if it's always in present tense. They're smart, they figure out, just like you and I figure out easily, what the Nicaraguan lawn boy is saying when he's trying to explain something to you in his 50 words of English. There's a slim chance in hell he'll get the tenses right, but you'll understand what he's talking about, and vice versa. So that tip again, learn everything in present tense. The future and past tense will take care of themselves once you get down here and start talking to the people. You'll pick it up, you'll hear the locals' variations on verbs you know, and slowly but surely, you'll be adjusting your phraseology accordingly. It'll come to you. However, if you cling to this tip in a structured Spanish class, you'll flunk out. But really, once you're down here, who gives a crap as long as the people understand what the hell you're trying to get across? So again, save yourself countless hours of studying and drilling, and just avoid everything but the present tense. Until you're completely comfortable with it, then move on. Yeah, I know. You're thinking, Johnny, you really got off the track here. I started off the show talking about water and electric utilities and such, and here I am talking about how to improve your crummy Spanish. Anyway, I left off by telling you that lightning completely destroyed a power pole transformer about 2 blocks from my place in the coffee fields. Then I got on the line, spoke to a real live person, and she told me to flip the flip-ons. Gotta love that, huh? And then she asked me if the neighbor's power was out too. And I said, I don't know, I don't have any neighbors, but I can tell you this. I saw lightning hit a transformer, and believe it or not, transformers are called transformadores here. How about that for a memory aid? And I said, it blew up like a bomba. Yeah, bomba is a bomb. You know, la 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 bomba. And now you're probably thinking, hey, this Spanish stuff, it ain't so bad. They have so many words that are practically in English. I think I can get the hang of it. Johnny did. Anyway, then she said, it really blew up. That's unusual. Inusual. That's unusual in Spanish. Inusual. And then she said, okay, we'll send someone out. And I said, when are they going to get here? She said, well, depends on traffic and all that, but pretty soon. Okay, so that phone call went out at 7:30 in the morning. They showed up at 9. Not really that bad, since I'm way out in the boonies in the coffee field. So 2 guys show up in a pickup truck with a ladder and some electrical tools. They knock at the door. I told them lightning hit the pole and a transformer. They went up on the ladder. Sure enough, they said the transformer had been burnt out. Now, these gray pole-top transformers, I'm sure you've seen them all over the place in the States, kind of look like a small metal trash can. They weigh probably 75 pounds. So anyway, the 2 guys went up, pulled it down, took it apart in their truck and said, oh, too bad, can't fix it here. I'm thinking, uh-oh. Now they have to go back to some kind of supply depot and pick one up and come back. That's going to be a couple hours, maybe tomorrow. Then I said, how long is it going to take you to get another one? And the guy says, let me see. He unfolded a map of the area, went on his smartphone to check a site. He marked the map with his pen and he said, there are some unused transformers in a new subdivision about 2 miles from here. I said, what? Unused transformers? Why is that? Well, he said, the construction business is going great guns. And there are many guarded, gated communities that aren't finished yet, but the infrastructure's in place. It's all there. So we have a lot of poles and a lot of transformers that aren't being used. So he said he's just going to go scab one from another subdivision that doesn't need it right now. So anyway, half an hour later, they're back with a brand new transformer in the back of that pickup truck. By the way, if you haven't figured it out already, what these electric company guys were describing was another completely different take on the real estate bubble here. Only they'd never describe it as a bubble. They're just looking at the construction boom as a great opportunity for work. In fact, they told me the story about how the company's hiring and training more and more installers and linemen all the time. They both said the company can't keep up with all the new projects and subdivisions. In fact, one of them said, it's just crazy right now. But where was I? Oh yeah. Let me recap the service I got from the electric company, which, by the way, is a joint public-private enterprise. So I made the call at 7:30 in the morning. By 11 a.m., I was saying goodbye to those smiley, happy guys with my power fully restored. You know, my only regret is I forgot to ask them about their training and how much they get paid. Oh well. Oops, getting towards the end now. If you're planning on signing up for my July 2016 Expat Insider Seminar, just go to www.thenewexpat.com, click the link on the top of the page that says Johnny's 2016 Seminar, and you'll get all the information and sign-up details. It's your chance to experience that perpetual spring weather because we'll be smack dab in the middle of the Altiplano. And while you're on the newexpat.com webpage, don't forget to check out those terrific pre- and post-seminar trips arranged by John Galt. And I assure you, if you take either one or both of those, you'll be talking about them for a long, long time. So if you're coming down to the seminar, do spend an extra couple days and take advantage of one or more of his trips. By the way, people have been asking me if I'm tagging along on John Galt's trips. Well, maybe if he comps me the hotel rooms. Oh, and don't forget to go to my YouTube channel to see the slides and pictures that go along with the Expat File show. Do subscribe. It's free. Oh, and by the way, for those of you who've seen the YouTube on my show number 557 and were wondering why there was a slide there with a bunch of chickens on water skis, well, that's because I asked my overqualified YouTube master, Jennifer, to find a slide with Latin chicks on water skis. Yep, she put up Latin chicks on skis, all right. Chicks of the feathered kind. No hidden messages there, but I could be wrong.
South of the border.
You've been listening to the Expat Files, living in Latin America, coming to you twice a week from somewhere south of the border. Email me, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want me to help you sort out your own Latin American plans, schedule a one-on-one consult with me. Just send an email and let me know at theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.